Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 269. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Truly appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps me continue to highlight the great people that we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Iron Grip, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with companies that have great people and great products, and Iron Grip is definitely one of those. I've put it in every weight room I've ever had, and Craig Sowers and the group at Iron Grip, Mike and everybody, just fantastic people. So if you're in the market, please reach out to them. If not, just next time you see them at a conference or something, let them know how much you appreciate them being a part of things. This week I'm joined by Zach Hooten. He's a basketball strength and conditioning coach at USF. I've had been a chance to go down there and watch him work. I've followed him since Wayne State days. I guess you were doing some things online and whatnot, and just doing a great job, man. So appreciate you coming on the show, brother.
I appreciate you having me, man. Appreciate you having me.
You know, I mentioned Wayne State in there. You've been, Northern Michigan. You've been, I don't even know where, Moravian?
Yeah, Moravian College.
Moravian College. I mean, you've been a handful of places here early in your career. Which one of those places best kind of is where you really kind of grew into your own, you know, that became the coach that you are today?
I would say Moravian for sure. That was a hell of a job, hell of a place, and a lot of really great people. And I probably shouldn't have had that job when I did have it. You know, I think I got that job when I was 20, either 22 or 23. For some reason they said, hey, I'm gonna let you be in charge of 780 athletes. I did. First year was myself and a young guy named Vinny, Vinny from Jersey, if you can imagine. Man, did I learn a lot. You know, I learned how to be efficient with a lot, with very, very little. And then they let me redo a room. I spent like $160,000 on a new room, and things changed. Got another assistant in there, and man, and I learned a lot of really great coaches.
Yeah, I think I tell people all the time is that I don't think you really learn how to be a strength coach until you sit in the big chair, and you have to make the decisions when it comes to culture and managing people and time and resources and things like that. And I think that's ultimately the job. The writing the workouts, as much as we want to make that complex, it's really the easy part.
Yeah, that should be the easiest part of the job.
Most definitely. Well, you don't become a head strength coach at 22, 23. You don't have the job that you have now without making some mistakes along the way. What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made and how you learned from it?
The biggest mistake that I've ever made is thinking that I know too much too fast. I think that when I started as an intern under Coach Mendoza, I mean, you think that you got an idea of what in the hell you're doing, but you don't. I had the opportunity to learn under a guy that had 25 years, plus experience, worked in a lot of high caliber programs, you'd say. And I had no idea what the hell I was getting into. And I thought I did. And then I got the job in Moravian, and still thinking, I kind of know what I'm doing because I learned from a guy who's got some really serious background. But then I got there, and I got no idea how to talk to coaches and no idea how to, my first, 6 months was just trying to figure out how in the hell to manage myself as a coach and manage a bunch of athletes. And you really don't know anything until you've been put in situations. And that was one of the biggest mistakes I've made, is thinking that I do know, or I did know stuff that I didn't.
Oh yeah, no, I can echo that for sure. Well, you've had a unique kind of background to have coached at all three levels. I mean, Division III, Division II, Division I now. What's maybe the biggest differences between the, you know, the three, and what are your biggest, you know, what would you recommend to that young Zach, you know, chasing this dream?
You know, everybody tells you not to chase a logo, right? But I will say that you got a hell of a lot more at the Division I level than you do at the other levels. But you got to learn to appreciate all of them and kind of what you get and the type of atmosphere it is. Because you can go sit in a Division III job, which, you know, some people for some reason, I don't know why, but they kind of look at it like, I don't want to drop down to Division III. But you could legitimately go work a Division III job of eventually become an associate AD or an AD. Now you're making a lot of money, you know, and you're in a position where you can be really successful. You know, I think that's the first thing I would say to somebody is you can chase the logo because at the Division I level, you're going to get a lot of really nice stuff. But as you know, this is the pressure is a whole lot different. So, you know, the need to succeed at that level is a lot different than at the Division III or the Division II level. I'm not saying that it's not there, but I think that everybody knows that you can be gone pretty quick if you don't succeed at the highest level. And then if I could give the biggest advice to somebody, you know, when they're starting out is like, you gotta be willing to take those jobs to understand the best way to do the job that you're going to be asked to do. You know, I don't think that the way that we train now is any different. Well, I mean, it's different, but it's not much different than the way it was when I started. And I think that's because anybody that has the bare bones in the beginning, they're going to continue to kind of just still evolve a little bit, but you're going to keep doing the same kind of stuff that you learned under and what, you know, your basic stuff that you did in the beginning. So I would say that you can't be afraid to go take that job just because it's a Division III job, you know, or a Division II job. You know, because I played Division II ball. I'll tell you, Coach Winters at Wayne, you know, you talk about guys that run like a Division I program, and we were there all year round. You know, I was blessed to learn under that because I didn't know any different.
Right.
Went to Division III, and we only had half the guys there in the summer. My first summer, we had like 11 guys. My second summer, you know, somehow I got those guys convinced to take awful jobs and stay there. You know, they legitimately had a job. They took nails out of wood all day.
Right.
I don't know why the hell they took those jobs, but they stayed there all summer, and you just kind of grow. And I think that's how you figure out how you are as a coach, because Division I level, and you know this, is like they could show up. They got to show up. They've got to be there. They've got to do that kind of stuff. But if you can get kids to buy in at that level to be there and when they don't have to be, I think you're going to be a better coach in the end there. So I'd say you learn a lot more when you don't have the resources.
Yeah.
When you do have all the resources, learn to appreciate it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you circled it back around there with that. And I was going to say that that's absolutely the right takeaway in my mind, is the fact that you learn to appreciate what you get when you start at a smaller level and you work your way up, as opposed to the other way around. You know, and you know, I think that, you know, A, you learn to appreciate. And I think the other thing is that you learn to be a lot more creative. I mean, I literally remember being in, you know, in that Sun Dome that you're standing in or outside of right now, and a little 2,000 square foot weight room, and putting a string from wall to wall instead of, you know, because we didn't have hurdles, and doing that for hurdle mobility, you know, and you find ways to get the things done, and now you throw me out in any setting, and I have that experience and that toolbox to be able to pull upon. You know, just like you do from being more IBM and the whole deal. And so I think it's, there's always something to be said for chasing the logo and getting that experience and having those resources and things like that. But the job doesn't change. You know, it's still 16 basketball players. It's still 105 football players. It's still, you know, that relationship piece doesn't change. And that's ultimately why we got in the profession in the first place. We talk a little bit about, you know, that impact that you make, you know, with those athletes, you know, and having some responsibilities outside of strength and conditioning. I mean, strength and conditioning, you know, I mean, that's what we call it, right? Strength and conditioning coach, but it's so much more than that. Talk a little bit about, you know, some of the roles that you have and responsibilities you have outside of strength and conditioning, and and how that should be factored in where we're taking this profession.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I don't think I know. You know, everybody thinks that you get up to, you know, like right now I work with men's basketball, women's golf, right? And everybody thinks your workload drops, but it doesn't, you know, because you're filling your day with other things that you never thought that you would do in a million years. You know, and then sometimes you get humbled because you got to go do some stuff that you haven't done since you were an intern. You know, because, you know, the situation I'm in, like the job just has to get done. It doesn't matter who does it. You know, and sometimes it's looked at like that. So, you know, you spend a lot more time managing food and managing meals and managing nutrition and doing stuff that you never thought you would do, or, you know, cleaning stuff that you never thought you'd clean again, or, you know, just stuff like that. You know, so those are some of the responsibilities that you kind of have. And then you kind of work into, you know, player relationships where, like, I always felt like I've got a interesting kind of relationship with a lot of players because I've got a, you know, a versatile background. I've done a lot of different things and been put in some different situations, you know, so I can kind of relate to a little bit of, you know, everybody. I can relate to your, let's just say different people, you know, before I go down that rabbit hole. You know, so, you know, just a lot of different scenarios there. So I think that everybody thinks that when you only got one team, that things are a lot easier. But I tell you, I think I work a lot more in areas now. I do the same amount of work total than I was before.
Yeah, I think that's the hard part, because you're right. And when you, and strength coaches are probably the most loyal, team-oriented people on the staff, you know. And so when it comes down to grunt jobs or just, you know, additional responsibilities, you know, falling on somebody, a lot of times the strength coach is like, all right, just load me up because I can handle it, you know. And I think we have to do a better job of defining what those are and sticking, you know, kind of to our guns as to what those things are and aren't, you know, when we take jobs. But I also, you know, but I also think that we need to look at redefining what our title is, what our role is in these organizations. And because, I mean, you know, you got a lot of people that say it's the most important position, or it's the, you know, basically the head coach when the head coach isn't around. But then, you know, looking at the hierarchy, it's, you know, the ninth, you know, in football, it's the ninth or 10th highest paid position. It's, you know, I'm not looking necessarily for us to rally around more money and all those types of things, but I think we need to, you know, for us to be valued the way that we think and should be valued, we have to define that for people, and we're not doing a great job of that.
I completely agree with you there, because I think that's one of my, like, I was to, like, personal weaknesses. Like, you tell me to do something, I'm just going to go do it.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to ask anybody else to do it, because I'll get pissed off at them for the job that they did do, you know, and because I wouldn't have done it that way. And that's something that I personally just struggle the hell out of with. You know, so defining those roles is tough. I guess tough. You just want to do a good job, you know. But the same thing what you're saying is, yeah, you are supposed to be, you know, that defining figure that a lot of programs want. You know, but just like you said, it doesn't always come down that way. That's not how it trickles down, because you kind of look at the pay and the responsibilities and kind of what you're asked to do. And sometimes you're as important as maybe some people think you are, you know, sometimes you're not looked at like that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's interesting. It's an interesting dynamic for sure.
Well, I think it's, you know, I mean, for us as strength coaches, and this is, you know, leads into my next question is, you know, we have to be willing to get outside of just the four walls of our office. We have to get outside of the four walls of the weight room, and we have to, get more athletic director type jobs. We have to get, you know, we have to create more academic based programs around what we actually do. We have to define what it means to evaluate a strength coach. At least, you know, like I said, I mean, I think it's taking action. It's having a sense of responsibility to the profession as much as you know, being in the profession. And you've done that. You at a young age. I mean, I don't know how old you were when you were at Wayne State, you know, doing that, you know, the intern curriculum or whatever the video series was that you're doing at that time. You know, you got a podcast now called, you know, Between the Sets. You know, I mean, how old are you now?
I'm 27, Coach.
Yeah, if you're 27, you know, you've had a tremendous amount of great experience. You've never been a head strength coach. You're a director now. You know, just because you're 27 years old doesn't mean that you don't have value or great content or can't help mentor people a little bit further down the path or even ahead of you. You know, you did that at an early age. What would you say to the coaches out there that aren't doing the speaking or aren't creating the podcast or aren't, you know, or maybe are concerned that they don't have a voice or they need to be a certain age to give back?
I'd say that you're doing everybody a disservice. I think that everybody needs to realize that they're a hell of a lot better at a lot of things than they think they are. You know, and that's an issue. You know, like, we're not, you know, that's just as much as well as I do, is like, we're not gonna get rich from what we're doing. You know, we're not gonna be able to sail off into the sunset and have, you know, these ridiculously nice things or this, that, and the other thing unless you want to, you know, unless you want to take care of yourself and promote yourself or your and what you do and how your athletes do things. And you know, like, you know, what's stopping you from getting into, I mean, I just want to go down a completely different path, but like, what's stopping you from getting into real estate and what's stopping you from getting into, you know, online stuff and what's stopping you from getting into, you know, having a side business that you can be lucrative from? Because at the end of the day, I mean, if you're okay making the money that you're making and doing what you're doing, that's fine. More power to you. But don't bitch about the things that you have if you're not willing to fix, you know, the situation that you're in. Because you, like I said in the beginning, is like you're doing a disservice to everybody else because you're not utilizing the tools that you have to be able to help the people around you. You know, and like, I'm not even saying this because I'm on this, but like, my on this podcast with you, but like that when I was 20 years old, I started interning younger than most people. You know, so I was 20 years old. I started interning. I listened to Ron McKeery, Iron Game Chalk Talk. I said, what in the hell is stopping me from doing something like he's doing? You know, and I still have not gotten to the point where, you know, Iron Game Chalk Talk is, or, you know, just being where you're at in general. But I know that there's coaches that contribute to what I'm doing or what Strength Coach Select is doing, or, you know, they're helping other coaches because of the content that we put out there.
Right.
You know, and that's what it should be. That's what you should be able to do. You know, is there's a million ways to do things, and you're really hurting the people around you and yourself, man, if you're not willing to step outside your comfort zone and just do what you want to do instead of just doing what everybody else does.
Yeah, I mean, I think the something that somebody told me once was like, if you don't do it, then who will? You know, then who does? You know, it's the people that don't have nearly the credibility, don't nearly have the experience. Don't, you know, I mean, the group that's listening to this, I mean, you're working at some of the elite institutions in the world. You're working at some of the top programs in the world. And if you don't do it, then that personal trainer that's at whatever, you know, rinky-dink gym that trains one person is going to be the one on the internet saying that they're the greatest thing in the world and that, right, that they get the right football program or basketball program, whatever it is. So in some ways, we have an obligation to kind of put good content out there so that other people don't, or at least they know what good content is versus what is bad. But then the other part of that is, you know, every one of us have learned from some mentor, right, that was just a little bit further down the road than we are. And a content expert in a court of law is just somebody that knows more than everybody else in the room, you know. And so, like, you know, like, you know what it means to be an intern because you've been that, you know, and so you can educate and empower and motivate other interns, you know, because you've already walked that road, or be GA or assistant or first year in basketball or whatever it may be, you know. And so, you know, we got to remember that this field is 60 years old, you know, and that we all are, or we're chronicling, you know, everybody that's listening to this is chronicling the first 100 years of a profession, you know, and so we need to do a better job of being a part of that process, you know, and I'll get on my soapbox for a second, but like, for example, the CSCCA, you know, every year the people that coordinate the speaking part of that, I've spoken at that thing, I don't know, 7 or 8 times now, never said no. But every time I've done that, somebody would, you know, the people that were organizing it would always say that they're having such a hard time getting speakers, people that are willing to speak. And I'm like, it should be super easy. You know, the 30 people that are getting their master's jackets, they're the speakers, you know? And the response has always been that, you know, not everybody likes to public speak, or not everybody likes to put, you know, I'm like, look, if you don't put yourself out there, you're not willing to do that amongst your peers, then you're not really a master. You're not truly elite in this profession. And speaking and being a public speaker doesn't mean that you're elite, but at least having the willingness to be in front of your peers talking about what we do, that's what's elite in my mind. So I think what you've done is it's taken a lot of guts to do that early. It's stuff that not a lot of people do, and you're going to be much better for it in the long run, and providing a great resource for coaches. I mean, you say you listen to Beyond Chalk. Wayne State, I was watching your stuff. You know, it's kind of a cool. You know, I'm trying to constantly learn as well. So I appreciate that. We end the show, man, with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
I learned from Jim Caruzzi, and you know, his thing is just do simple things savagely well. I mean, that's as simple as it gets, right? I mean, right. Just do what you do to execute it at the highest level. And you're going to be a great coach. You're going to be a great person. You're going to be, I mean, just across the board. And that's not just, I think a lot of us kind of get lost in, you know, it's this coaching, you know, this, that, and the other thing. But, like, it applies to literally everything that you do on a daily basis. I mean, you want to be a great husband, then go be a great husband. If you want to be a great father, then go be a great father. Just execute at the highest level.
Right.
You want to be a great coach, then just do the simple things, the stuff that you were taught from day one. Do that stuff savagely well.
Yeah, I love it.
You'll be successful.
Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
Book, Thomas Wheelwright, Tax-Free Wealth. It's not your typical strength coach book, but man, like I said earlier, you're not going to do this to get rich, and you might as well figure out a way to make yourself more lucrative.
Sure.
So that's one book I think is great. Jay Cox actually recommended that to me. And I read that, and it kind of changed my whole perspective on a lot of stuff. App, I think that Instagram, man, is such a tremendous tool. And that's not like, I guess you could say, strength coach specific, but I literally get on there, and the stories feature of Instagram, I probably pick like 2 to 3 things out of that every single day that I'm like, man, that actually looks kind of cool, or I ain't never seen something tried like that, or, you know, just kind of go across the board. And some coaches do a lot better job utilizing that than others. But man, is that a hell of a tool. And not only can you actually display what you, your athletes are doing, you know, on a daily basis, which some people are scared of, just like we talked about, but
right.
Man, you can actually show people what your athletes are doing and how you're programming and how you go about them. They actually can hear you coach, you know. I think that was like when I was interviewing for this job under coach was like one of the biggest things that what I've gathered, set myself apart from others was, you know, and this kind of gets away from Instagram, but videotape yourself doing things so you can figure out how in the hell you can do it better, right? Sure. So, you know, when I was interviewing for this job, I had people videotape me coaching the warm up, going through a lift, going through an agility set, you know, session with the guys. And whether or not it was football or not, and I was applying for a basketball job, Coach Gregory had an opportunity to watch me coach without me, right, like was telling him that I could do the things that I was going to do.
Right.
And that was beneficial. You know, so people can actually watch you work with the athletes, and they can watch what your athletes are doing. I think that's best of both worlds. And then website, this is going to be a shameless plug, but, you know, I think that our website, strengthcoachselect.com, has got some really, really good stuff from a lot of really good coaches. You know, and I think that anybody can utilize that and watch the videos and you know, listen to the podcast and get some really good information.
Oh, that's great, man. Yeah, we're gonna link up everything, your social media and the website and everything as well, so that people can get to that, you know, in the show notes. But like I said earlier, man, it's really cool to see what you've done in your career. I mean, you've already accomplished so much at 27, and it's kind of fun, you know, for me, because I was a 23-year-old first time head strength coach at South Florida. And to see what's being done down there by you and the rest of the staff, and how that place has continued to grow, it's really cool. As an old bull to a new bull, it's a pretty cool deal. So I appreciate you coming on the show, man.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.